Welcome to Community Conversations. These are pre-recorded interviews brought to you each Tuesday and Thursday at 8 a.m. on KRFY. Because of ongoing concerns about the COVID pandemic, we are not able to be in the studio doing live broadcast interviews right now. But we are still dedicated to recording and bringing to you topics of local and current interest, highlighting voices from our community. For Community Conversations, we are using phones and web-based technology so that participants can be recorded remotely. Please bear with us if there are any gaps or hiccups that might be caused by a slow or unstable phone or internet connection. Also, keep in mind that because these interviews are recorded, information may change between the time of this recording and the time that you hear it broadcast. Thank you for joining us for today's Community Conversation on KRFY 88.5 FM, listener-supported community radio for North Idaho. Good morning and welcome to another Community Conversation with your hosts, Phil Huff and Julie Calamine. Top of the new year to you, Julie.
Well, thank you, Phil. How is your first week in the new year going?
Well, it's been, you know, a little bit of slow meltdown here in the valley. So Deb and I got out and did a little hike around Round Lake, which this time of year, usually we see people out ice fishing. What we saw this week was beavers out. I don't think they were fishing, maybe fishing for weeds, but there were four or five of them popping up in holes in the ice and then looking like they were trying to sun themselves in the clouds. It was really
interesting
phenomenon. They were out above the ice.
Yeah, that's really neat. I love Round Lake. And as you know, we've interviewed manager of Round Lake State Park a number of times, and I just love getting out there. I'm out there almost every week, but I have missed that interesting experience. But for me, Phil, the experience in the last couple of days has been watching the snow on my hay field cross-country track melts and melts and melts, and all I see is brown hay now, which is sort of disappointing, but I know there'll be more. And in my gloom, I thought I would run out and see what's happening with my winter carrot crop. Phil, I hope you're looking at the Zoom, because I know that your bride is a huge carrot lover, and we've talked about winter carrots, and you are so right, they're delicious and lovely. And you're muted, Phil.
We try to save our winter carrots for the springtime, but that looks enticing. We're going to have to go dig some up.
I know it. And for listeners, because they cannot see this carrot, I'm going to do an audio. And here goes, guys. First crunch of my winter carrot. Was it heard? I hope so. Anyway, it's delicious.
Heard around the world.
Yes, but since we can't simply talk about matters of the moment, for the entire hour, I'd like to introduce our topic and our guest today, if I can swallow my carrot anyway. And our guests today are the Kiniksu Land Trust with three of the folks that work there. And rather than matters of the moment, they deal with matters of the generations. They work on conserving land and keeping track of our environment for many generations to come. And the guests that will be joining us today are Katie Eglund Cox. Katie is the executive director of the Kiniksu Land Trust. Hello, Katie. Let's hear your voice.
Hello, Julie. Hello, Phil. Nice to be with you today.
It's great to have you. And our second guest is Marcy Timblin. Marcy, you are the new, I think relatively new, or maybe very new, director of communications. Hello, Marcy.
Hi, Julie. Hi, Phil. Yes, I'm very new. I just started in November.
Oh, yes, that's very new. And then our third guest is Regan Plum. Regan, you're the conservation director. Hello, Regan.
That's right. Good morning. Hi, Julie. Hi, Phil. Nice to be with you today.
Oh, good morning.
Happy to have you. Well, let's get started, and we'll start with you, Katie. Why don't you give us a brief overview of Kiniksu Land Trust and tell us about its mission?
Excellent. It's exciting for us because actually we just, as many nonprofits do, we just went through the process of renewing our strategic vision, which included a look and a rewrite of our vision and our mission. And our mission is caring for the lands and people of the Kiniksu region today, tomorrow, and forever. And there are two very important words in there, being lands and people, because it very much represents what we do now. As we began, as Kinnexu Land Trust began, we really focused on predominantly on the lands. But in 2012, when we started working in what we call community conservation, we really looked at people and how the land and the people are connected, and how through our programs we can even connect, make that connection further and deeper, and how important it is, because we know that when we teach people to really love the land and we bring people out onto the land, then they will take care of the land, which is really our mission in perpetuity, to for us to take care of the land and for our communities to help take care of the land.
There's really so much there to unpack. We're going to have a fun-filled almost hour. Yes. What we like to do on the show, though, when we have local organizations with new folks, is get a little deeper dive into them. And Marcy, while you're new to Kinnexu Land Trust, most listeners will recognize your name from being a downtown Sandpoint business manager to bagel shop owner and librarian. And I've been thinking about this, and I'm sure you all have. The thing that seems to tie it together is the stories, and I mean that in a very literal positive sense, that you tell through each of those. So it seems like the ultimate destination you were meant for is a communications director position. But tell us a little more about yourself and what you're doing now, and what brought you here.
So yeah, I mean, I've done a few things, but it's what's really interesting to me anyway, is just how it has come full circle. I mean, from the time I was a little kid, I grew up kind of in the ghetto of North Portland, you know, and I was an outdoor girl then. And then I moved to North Idaho, and just, you know, when I got into college, I took every natural resources class I could get my hands on, and so I majored in communications. But then I just, you know, I did a lot of things in the natural resources industry for a while, and then I kind of got off track and did a whole bunch of other stuff. I, you know, was a janitor and an insurance salesperson, and I mean, I've done a lot of weird different things, but throughout all of it, you know, every day after work, I was up in the mountains, you know, on a hike, and it's always been my true love. And Katie will tell you this, I have crushed on Kinnexu Land Trust since I first heard of it. I've always wanted to work here. So this is like such a candy store job for me. It's just such a dream come true to be back in this industry and working for, you know, such an awesome team with such a great mission. So that's it.
Well, welcome aboard. And I feel almost like we should give Katie a moment of rebuttal or something. I'm sure I speak for everyone when it says it's nice to see you in this position. Before we get into a whole series of questions, Reagan, tell us a little bit about you. You've been with Kinnexu Land Trust since, it seems like, almost from the beginning of this new evolution.
Well, the beginning was back in 2002, but I have been here since 2013. So I have been privileged to see the organization through a lot of really exciting changes over the last, coming up on 8 years. And it continues to be a really exciting organization to be involved with, because as you will hear in a few minutes, we're always innovating and adapting in order to address the challenges of our community and try to make it try to help out where we can.
Yeah, very good. Well, 2020, such a crazy year for our city, the nation, nonprofits, and I'm sure that's true for Kinnexu Land Trust. Why don't you tell us a bit about how the organization was impacted and how you were able to respond to that? And I don't know who wants to take that one. Katie, I think.
Yeah, I'll take that one. It you know, when everything happened in March and everything started shutting down and the children really went home from school, that's when we came together, the office, and said, well, you know, a big part of our mission is our education work in the schools. So how do we do this with all the kids at home? And this is probably when they need this outdoor time more than ever. And we have them scattered across the county. And so we began to innovate, and we thought about how do you reach the kids? And it's very similar to how our schools did, and we knew it would have to be virtually. We started working on a bunch of video projects where Dave, our director of education, would come to the kids through the computer and teach them how to do woodburn bowls, or he had a great story series of a story he wrote about, and he told those stories from his gypsy wagon, which he was designing at the time. So the kids got to watch him design and build the gypsy wagon while listening to the story that he told. And then we realized that, you know, it's pretty safe to be outside. And so we put together an adventure race at Pine Street Woods. And also we realized during this time that people were going to Pine Street Woods just for that sort of peace of mind, that ability to get out to, we all were sort of locked in our houses for a while. So Pine Street Woods became a place of respite for a lot of people. And so our work never slowed through COVID. It actually probably increased because we had more traffic at Pine Street Woods, more people coming up there. And so we needed to be ready for all of that. So we just made the decision, as many people know, Camp Kinixu, our summer program, is beloved by the kids in this region. And we knew that especially after being at home, learning virtually for the remainder of the school year, that something that they needed was time with others outside in a safe environment. And so we made the choice to go forward with Camp Kinixu. We brought 150 kids throughout the summer in a 6-week program. It's a week-long program. So we brought those children to Pine Street Woods, and it's for them, it's the highlight of their summer. And so it was lovely to be able to continue with that program and run it just as it has been in the past. As well, you know, now, you know, as we towards the school year starting up, we realized as well that we needed to help our schools. We needed to provide programs because of the shortened schedule, and we had kids getting out of school at 1 o'clock. There was no place for a lot of kids to go between one and four. So we sat down with our superintendent, Andrew Murray at LPOSD, and we said, how can we help you? And that's when we began working on the design for an after-school program to help get those kids outside, those kids that really need it the most, to get them outside after school between those hours of 1 and 4. So we've been doing a lot of wonderful things, I think, in COVID, and excited about what's coming up as well.
Yeah, that's great information. And Phil and I know well how popular the summer camp has been for you. The summer before, we were able to interview something like 12 summer camps. And we weren't even able to interview summer camps this last summer because so many were canceled. Mm-hmm. So it's just great that you were able to hold camp and have it work out.
So it sounds like you've got the same plans for next summer to continue on. Any mm-hmm. changes to the program or...?
No changes to the program as of right now. So yeah, we're always paying attention to what's safe and making sure that what we're doing is safe. And so, but right now we're still planning 6 weeks, 150 kids up at Pine Street Woods.
And so the after school program you started this fall with the LPOSD, is that continuing through the winter?
So it's taking a bit of a hiatus because right now it went all the way through until winter break, and we can talk about this. Dave's putting on 2 weekends of what we call Winter Camp Kinixu, but we'll start up the after school program when the weather gets a little bit better than it is now.
Yeah, it would be a bit wet for me, and I'm not even a kid, so that makes sense. Well, that's wonderful to hear about education and reaching out to the young folks in the area, but we have another topic we'd like to ask you about, and that's an award. Last fall, Kinixu Land Trust received national recognition. Tell us about that.
Well, this is Reagan. I'm going to jump in on this one. KLT has received a couple different funding grants from a program called the Recreational Trails Program. We refer to it all the time as RTP. And that is administered by the Idaho Department of Parks and Recreation here in Idaho, but it occurs in all 50 states. So it's a wonderful funding resource to support the development of new trails, and Pines Tree Woods has been lucky enough to benefit from it a couple times. Well, every fall, there is a group of national and regional trail-related organizations called the Coalition for Recreational Trails that get together and choose a kind of a best of recipient in a number of different categories. I think there are six or eight different categories. Well, one of those categories is called multi-use and corridor sharing, and they actually selected Pine Street Woods from across the entire nation as their favorite recreational trails program recipient for 2020 in that category. So this was a really significant achievement for Kinnexie Land Trust, because we strive so hard to create a space where all sorts of people can come out and share these trails together, be they hikers or bikers or dog walkers or skiers. So to receive this this validation of the project in that particular category, multi-use and corridor sharing, was really a tremendous honor for us.
So it sounds like the multi-use and corridor share, the MUX Award.
MUX.
Yeah. So what's happening? We've been talking about the Pine Street Woods, and I'll open the question, not knowing the answer. Of course we do. What's going on at the Pine Street Woods in the winter? It's full of activity.
So right now we do have our, this is Marcy. We are having our winter camp Kinnexie, as Katie mentioned. So that's over the course of two different weekends. And so last weekend we had our first two sessions. And so we break it up into two different age groups. So we have the younger kids come one day, and then the older kids the next day. And they're, we haven't filled up entirely for the next weekend. But this past weekend it was crazy rainy and the kids had a blast anyway. Dave, our education person, he had so much fun and said that even though the kids got really, really wet, it didn't get them down. They still had a great time. So it's great to see neat things happening even in the wintertime, and even with the nasty weather, the kids are still getting outside and enjoying it.
Yeah, well, tell us a little bit about the snow, Marcy. I mentioned that my poor brown hayfield is unskiable. Is there any skiing that can happen at Pine Street Woods?
Well, right now it's not looking so good. But if people want to get updates about what the skiing is looking like and whether or not it's been groomed, they can go on the Sandpoint Nordic Center website, and they do regular updates there. And I try to share those on social media whenever there's a change, so they can also look at our Facebook page.
Mm-hmm. And the other one is that POP is grooming the narrow trails. And so POP also provides a grooming report. So there's wide trails for Nordic skiing, and then the narrow trails for fat tire biking, hiking, trail running still, snowshoeing. And so there's two different trail networks. At about 3:30, there will be 65 children up there for the Sandpoint Nordic Club's Youth Ski League. Which happens every Monday and Wednesday afternoon, where you have every ages 6 to 16, different levels of skiers up there racing around the trails. So the coverage is sparse right now. And as we get more and more rain, it gets thinner and thinner, but there's still groomed trails up there. So you can still slush along right now.
So for those who don't follow along as closely, POP is the Padre Peddlers, I would imagine. And it's a wonderful partnership arrangement with the Peddlers and with the Sandpoint Nordic Club, and a great range of accessible features for recreation. During this kind of transitionary year season where it's snow, it's ice, it's rain, it's slush, it's mud, Are there trails that you close because the conditions would just deteriorate the trail bed itself? I'm thinking muddy season type closures.
Those closures more so happen in the spring, I would say. I mean, it depends on how much our snow coverage disappears, but Pine Street Woods is 500 feet above elevation, the elevation of town. So it is actually quite amazing how long the snow will hold up there. And with that grooming base that we have for the narrow trails and the wide trails, it sort of, it packs it down and it gives a strong foundation. And so if there are trail closures, we mark those, we put signs up to let you know. But for the most part, until spring comes and you see that snow melt and then potential destruction on trails because of people using them, that's typically when we close certain parts of the trails. But there's so much up there to explore, because Pine Street Woods is also is the neighbor to Sherwood Forest, which is another, you know, probably roughly 10 miles of trails as well. So there's lots of space to explore. And I should note, Sherwood Forest is not groomed at all, but it's still a lovely walk because enough people use it that it keeps the walking surface somewhat reasonably packed down.
Yeah, it's a wonderful combined trail system. Katie, you've told us about some of the things that are happening, have happened, and are about to happen up at Pine Street Woods, but is there anything else coming up in the next few months that we should know about?
I'll jump in there. This is Reagan again. We are very excited about a blossoming new partnership with a college in Colorado called Colorado College. We crossed paths with them last summer during COVID, and we both of our groups were really thinking about innovative ways that we could address these new challenges. And we explained to them that we were looking for ways to support our schools, our teachers, and our students in more outdoor learning. And they proposed that they teach one of their architecture studio blocks last fall. Well, I say block because this is a school that goes that students just take one class at a time for 3.5 blocks. And then they have 4 of these blocks in the fall and 4 in the spring. So, one of the architecture professors said, well, why don't I take one of my architecture studio blocks in the fall, and I'll have my architecture students do a case study of, in this case, it was Farman's Tidwell Elementary School. So they got to know our little community up here in Northern Idaho, and they interviewed some of the teachers, administrators, and some of the older students at Farman's Tidwell, and spent 3.5 weeks designing in small groups these amazing outdoor classroom concepts that they then presented back to some of the community members here in Sandpoint. So looking forward, they're hoping to teach another one of these, a follow-up block, in the spring. And then our pie-in-the-sky dream would be for some of these students to come up next summer and actually construct one of these outdoor classrooms here in Sandpoint. So super exciting, because it allows these college students to dig their teeth into a real world challenge and provide a solution, and great for us to be able to tap into the skills and expertise that they offer.
And not to ask a stupid question, but that must have been an online class. We're a long ways from Colorado College.
Yeah, it was an online class, and they were all, I don't think any of them were actually, you know, on campus. They were all, it was an online class for them, and it was an online collaboration. So it was just amazing what they were able to produce, considering they were never even in the room together with their teammates or with their professor.
And it's likely a year ago that no one would have thought of this, or if they were thinking of it, they wouldn't be thinking as broadly as these kinds of partnerships. They'd be thinking more provincially. So it's really a wonderful testimony to how the COVID pandemic has allowed us to think more creatively and pull in different partnerships. So that's wonderful to hear that will continue on.
And I might just add, Phil, that a big part of doing this work and creating these outdoor spaces, outdoor learning spaces, is because our schools are finding, you know, we've been in the schools now for a little over 5 years. And what we're finding in terms of the data of what comes out on the days that we get to do outdoor education with the kids is that it's some of the best attendance that they see, some of the least amount of behavioral issues happen on those days. And so they're seeing that the benefits, and the other one being that kids can work for long periods of time together outside on projects. And so, and then of course, then add in COVID being outdoors, being a very safe place to be, it became important for, it's becoming important for these schools to be able to do more outdoor education, especially when schools can't always transport kids up to Pine Street Woods. Obviously Pine Street Woods and being in true nature is probably the most ideal situation, but sometimes you just want to go be able to go outside to do a lesson outside. And so to be able to have a space right outside these, you know, your classroom where you can take your class. And it was amazing seeing what these students at Colorado College were able to create in this this 4-week time period of outdoor spaces and resting spaces and active spaces. It was, I think it, I know it blew Eric Olson, the principal at Farm and Stidwell, away. You know, when we were talking about doing an outdoor structure, he said, I was thinking about the gable roof and the, you know, the posts, and that was about it. And so it was really fun for the teachers and the faculty and the students to be involved in this process and see what actually could come out of it. And for these students to see these kids in college doing these, coming into their community, creating this structure, I think it was really fun for them to see these, you know, big college students and what you do in college. So.
That's really neat. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love it. I can't wait to see which, if any, are finally incorporated at Farman. I would love to see that. So we'll move on a bit from that, which is just a wonderful project. But we've been talking with you all quite a bit about the most current projects, Pine Street Woods and the partnership, design partnership, but that tends to be what we would think of as community conversation, as you've told us about. But Nixu Land Trust also has another element, and that is along the lines of long-term land conservation with individual landowners, and just wanting to hear a bit more about that and if there's anything new happening in that direction with Kinnexu Land Trust. That would be Reagan.
Yes, Reagan again. So I'm really excited to share that we just finalized a brand new conservation easement on the last day of 2020, December 31st. And that is a permanent and voluntary conservation restriction to protect a property, a 44-acre property on the Bull River over on Highway 56. And it's actually right where the East Fork of the Bull River flows into the main body of the Bull River. So it's a particularly significant plot of ground from an ecological perspective, because so much wildlife utilizes those river corridors for migration. And it's also sort of a puzzle piece that connects existing conserved properties. So we're really excited about that. We're working, now on my desk, I have six additional conservation projects that are in motion right now. And it's particularly exciting to note that every single one of these six includes some component of public access. So that's more than we've ever been able to state before. And it just feels like people are more eager than ever to support and have access to open lands like this.
Yeah, and Reagan, could you just spend a little more time talking about conservation easements and how they can be different? I understand that some are on private land and not really intended for public access. And it does sound very exciting that the ones coming along will have an element of public access. Just talk a bit more about that.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up, Julie. It's really important to remind people that generally conservation easements do not include a public access component. They're private properties, and we are very, very conscious of the private nature of them. We don't reveal the exact locations of these properties, and it remains up to the private landowner whether they would like to welcome or allow the public onto their property. So it's very unique that in this case, we are working on some projects Some of them are conservation easements where the landowner would like to have public trails developed on their property. And some of them are actually properties where the land trust is considering acquiring the properties in fee. So KLT would actually own the properties. And then I can think of another one where a different entity would own the properties, but they would be open up to the public. So there are no two of these projects are alike. There's a whole range of different models represented in by the ones that I'm looking at right now.
So there's different kinds of projects and for different objectives, and you have a number of concluded and are working on. What ties it all together? What filter do you use to accept proposals from landowners, or do you target to go after and form the relationships to develop? Is there a master plan towards it all, putting it together?
That's a great segue, Phil, because another exciting piece that I wanted to share in the conservation department is that we are in the process of developing our first ever strategic conservation plan. KLT has always looked at a number of core conservation values, we call them, when we're assessing new projects, such as, you know, does this property protect healthy forests or clean water or important wildlife habitat? We have a general list of criteria that we look at, but we've never had a really objective method for assessing properties and comparing one with another. You know, we're a fairly small staff. We have limited bandwidth to process these conservation easements. And sometimes if we have two or three or four come at us at a time, we need to be able to prioritize which one is most meaningful and generates the greatest benefit in terms of conservation. So last year we received some wonderful grant funding from the Land Trust Alliance to partner with another organization in our area and develop a very robust spatial model to help us to assess projects in terms of our organization's conservation priorities. So we hope to complete that by mid-year in 2021, and that'll really help us to elevate the quality of the conservation work that we are conducting.
Yes, I would think so. When I think about our local land trust, Kinnickstu Land Trust, it also brings to mind other organizations that would do similar work. One that comes to mind for me is the Nature Conservancy, which is all over the world. But I'm interested in knowing why a landowner who is thinking about a conservation easement or maybe a donation of land might choose an organization like yourselves from the area as opposed to going with a national or international nonprofit?
Excellent question, Julie. The short answer is that we are grounded in this community, and we can really, in my mind, provide a personal touch that a national organization isn't able to provide. Oftentimes, those larger groups like the Nature Conservancy, they do amazing work, but they generally focus on more of a landscape scale in their conservation work. And Kinnickstu is able to respond to individual landowners who might have smaller parcels and properties that don't necessarily factor into a regional landscape scale perspective.
Well, I see Pine Street Woods as a great example of that being used on so many levels and preserving an ecology there that many of us wouldn't know about if it weren't for you.
Makes sense that smaller parcels and organizations that focus in on the local priorities and opportunities would be the natural partner for local landowners. And the Nature Conservancy has a strategic vision that may not define as its priorities the same ones that we see here in North Idaho. Bring us together. How do you all work in the same umbrella? And I'm going to suggest the Lands Alliance you mentioned is something of a bridge between the various land trusts across the country.
Absolutely. Yeah, we work very closely with the Nature Conservancy and a number of other land trust type organizations that operate at various levels. And we overlap service areas with many of them. but each of us has a unique mission and vision. And it's not uncommon at all for a project to, for a landowner to call us here at Kiniksu, and we'll realize, well, really, this is a better fit for the Nature Conservancy or for the Vital Ground Foundation or another one of our partners. The important thing for us is to find the organization that's the best fit, who can most clearly help support that landowner in accomplishing their long-term conservation goals.
Well, great explanation of how they fit together. And it's so good to hear that you do work together to find the best fit for folks wanting to be sure that their land will be taken care of into the future. So I love to hear that. Phil, have we missed any questions?
No, I think, you know, everything that we were thinking about beforehand, but it's always a good opportunity to check with our guests and see if there's anything on their minds that we've missed, anything you'd like to talk about coming up, events, activities, programs. It's January, so we always prognosticate, what does 2021 hold? Any final thoughts on those?
Well, I would just say, just to reiterate what Marcy said, that we have one more weekend of Winter Camp Kiniksu. And then we are looking forward to potentially having some adult programming in the spring. So looking at, you know, it's so funny because in all of these times when we do, when Dave, our director of education, does wildcrafting and does Camp Kiniksu and winter camp, often, very often, the parents will come drop off their kids and say, when do I get to go? When do I get to go to camp? When do I get to do wildcrafting and do a project? And so one of the things that we've been looking at for a long time is how do we deliver good, you know, this high quality adult education? And we have so many talented people in our region who are so skilled. And so we're looking at how do we pull some of these individuals that live here, and how do we provide more adult education classes and focusing on somewhat a term many people know as a folk school model. So we're looking at slowly starting up some of those classes. So look around the springtime and see about if we're, you know, look at our website. That's where we'll post things for those adult classes. And then again, like I said, looking forward to going into the summer and doing Camp Kiniksu this summer, as well as, you know, spending time this this spring back in our schools as we can.
One more thing I'll add to that is that we're so excited to be hosting Paul Bannock returning in February. He's a noted owl photographer who was here in Sandpoint 3 or 4 years ago. And he will be with us via Zoom on February, is it 16th, Marcy? Is that right, February 16th? So watch for that. Paul has a brand new book out on snowy owls that he will be presenting to us virtually in February. And we would love to, quote, see you there at that presentation. It's going to be great.
That sounds wonderful. I'll mark my calendar. I love owls, and I have yet to see the quiet pygmy owl in this area. It's a dream for me. So maybe there will be conversation about the pygmy owl. Never know.
Well, thank you all for joining us today. We really appreciate it. And as we roll through the year, we'll have you back on if there's emerging programs that you want to talk about or promote. And at some point, hopefully we'll get back to that style where we can have a featured guest and then a couple snippets. So KRFY will be evolving in the future year too. And so as we prognosticate that, we hope to have you back.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
You bet. Mm-hmm. Well, this has been KRFY Community Conversations with Phil Huff and Julie Calamine. We've been talking with the Kiniksu Land Trust and guests Katie Eglund Cox, the executive director, Marcy Timblin, the new communications manager, and Regan, where is your name? Your last name? I'm looking for it. Regan, thank you. And I don't see your last name, so I'm so sorry. Thank you, Plum, who have been joining us on Community Conversations. Have a great week, everyone.
Well, this wraps up another Community Conversation. Thanks for listening to KRFY 88.5 FM. listener-supported community radio for North Idaho and beyond. All of our programs can be heard live streaming on the web at krfy.org. And all of our community conversation shows are recorded and saved as podcasts on our website. KRFY strives to bring our community important local information. Currently, impacts from the COVID-19 pandemic remain at high levels across our state and region. In Idaho, we are at stage 2 level of restrictions and recovery. And Bonner County is currently at the red level, the highest level for risks of impact from the COVID pandemic. It is recommended we all follow the Panhandle Health District and government guidelines. If we help each other, we can get through this together. So let's be good neighbors and friends and protect each other. Please wear a mask in public, especially inside buildings and businesses, and keep a 6-foot distance apart from each other. Wash up and stay at home as much as possible, and stay home if you are sick. Stay safe, and thanks for listening. And before we close, we'd like to tell you about a new feature here at KRFY. If you'd like to see what song you have been listening to, you can go to our webpage or our Facebook page and find the playlist link. Then you can see the song you just heard. Until next week, enjoy all of our great programming, including Otto's Eclectic Mix, all day long.